is Inside Douglas County on News Radio 1240 KQEN. It's our daily in-depth look at people and issues that are shaping Douglas County. Inside Douglas County is presented by Concrete Builders Supply. Now, Inside Douglas County on News Radio 1240 KQEN.
Thanks for being here this afternoon. As was announced a few weeks ago, Douglas County, the local area, has become a certified Blue Zones community, and a virtual celebration coming up in a few days. We thought we'd take a step back today and sort of paint the overall national picture of Blue Zones efforts. And Nick Buettner is with us. He is the person who came to Douglas County about 3.5 years ago to introduce Blue Zones at an event out at Umpqua Community College. He's vice president of product for Blue Zones and joins us from Chile, Minneapolis. Dan, thanks for being on, or rather Nick, I just did it again. Thanks for being on this afternoon.
Thanks for having me.
We get Nick and his brother Dan confused periodically because they're both involved. So the recent announcement, explain for people, folks in this area have been hearing about Blue Zones for three and a half years, but talk about what it means for this area to be a certified community.
Sure. You know, Blue Zone Projects is a framework for well-being across the country. They're community-led movements where the communities are making improvements to their environment that are semi-permanent, permanent, evidence-based, that ideally tries to make the healthy choice a little bit easier. Since 2017, a local team on the ground, along with volunteers and steering committee and nonprofits, have come together to work with over 75 different organizations around your community, restaurants, grocery stores, schools, work sites, faith-based organizations, to implement those semi-permanent changes in their organizations to improve not only the health of their customers, but also the health of their employees. Along with that, the city has passed over 19 policies and programs that were implemented, programs that kind of looked at a mobile food pantry that went out to 4 food deserts in the county to provide access to healthy foods. And combined with that, they did a Veggie RX program where they're working with 4 clinics across the community to give prescriptions where people that are in the need for kind of healthy nutrition can get discounted prices when they go out and buy their fruits and vegetables at farmers markets, for example. I believe there was over $15,000 that have been redeemed of these coupons just at the farmers markets alone. It came together around schools, with your elected officials, and with nonprofits, and to pull together about a $4 million grant for bicycle lanes and sidewalks and crossings to your schools that hopefully make it so your parents aren't as afraid to allow their kids to walk and bike and do those things that we did as a kid. And they also looked at passing some smoke-free event policies so that events in the downtown area in your community can model behavior and addiction-free lives at community events, and they'll kind of create those family-free. And the last thing I think I want to mention around that is you also had about 7,000 people that came together to do an asset analysis, to find their purpose, to volunteer, to break down their isolation and create more social networks. And what it means for your community is between 2017 and now, there's less food insecurity. There's less childhood obesity amongst 11th graders. So what does that mean 10 years down the road for your community? Smoking rates decreased, increase in downtown renewals. We do an oversample when we started leveraging a tool called the Wellbeing Index. And then we come back at the end, and what we're seeing is more citizens in your community are thriving now than then. They're exercising more. There's less likelihood for obesity, and they're eating fruits and vegetables. And compared to the state, they also are outperforming the rest of your state when it comes to nutrition, exercise, and just how they look at their quality of life. So really amazing outcomes and impact for your community tied to all the hard work that your leaders and the Blue Zone Project team in Umpqua have done over the last 3.5 years.
So take us back to the start. Give us more information about how all these concepts, how Blue Zones was formed, and all the ideas that go with it.
Sure. It started back in 1999 when my brother Dan and I read the Danish twin studies. It talked about how 80% of how long we live is determined by lifestyle factors and our habits. Only 20% is genetic. Only 20% is healthcare. And if that was true, what we wanted to do was travel the world to see if we could find the places in the world where people have the longest life, the lowest rates of middle-age mortality, or reaching 100 at rates 10 times higher than they're doing it here in America. And more importantly, I think doing it with a fraction of the disease, because it is about that quality of life as we age, not just the quantity. My brother Dan wrote these articles up for National Geographic. We brought demographers and epidemiologists with us so that these are demographically confirmed. It took about 10 years of research to do all that work.
Wow. And then where did you take it from there that's led to what we're seeing around the Umpqua Valley and other places around the country as well?
Sure. Well, the big aha moment for us was never once did I meet somebody at age 50 said, you know, I don't want to do that Blue Zone diet, you know, in that research. Never once did I meet somebody said, you know, I want to go on that I want to start exercising. Longevity was never something they pursued. Rather, it ensued. So as you think about healthcare here in America today, you know, what we focus on is acute care. What we focus on is that relationship that you have with your doctor, right? You go into your doctor when you're sick, and it does a great job if you're sick. But if you're at risk but not yet sick, or you're healthy but you haven't, you don't have the disease yet, that it doesn't do a lot for us. You know, we as individuals know we shouldn't eat a Big Mac. We know we shouldn't drink a big thing of soda or sit on the couch all day. But we do it anyways because at the time we do it, it doesn't kill us. You know, we can eat unhealthy for 10 years and not die. But eventually those actions caught up. So the Blue Zone framework is what we try to do is think about who are you spending your time with and how do we set up those environments so that they're reinforcing healthier behaviors with your friends and your family. Those organizations, those places in your community where you're spending all of your time. How do you set up environments that just make it a little bit easier for us to be able to eat healthy? You know, and you know, I want to be careful because what I'm also saying here is I'm not saying we need to take away the bad things, but how do we create environments like at our restaurants or in our cafeterias at work or in our vending machines where if I want that healthy choice, it's at least available to me when I'm hungry. And then lastly, the culture and social norms in your community, those policies. Because if you can set all of those up, in some ways what we can do is put us on a treatment effect that will help us, that will save us from getting sick and kind of reduce that time between when we're going to need that doctor and when we're going to need that healthcare support. And I think more importantly, it gives us that better quality of life to be able to spend doing those things that you love to do without being sick and needing somebody to take care of you.
After we talked back in 2017 in your presentation out at Umpqua Community College, as I began to read some of the material at Blue Zones that was put in front of me, I was struck by the fact that you have these hot spots that are so different in terms of ethnicity and practices about a number of things in life. They're very different, yet there's a lot of commonalities in there in terms of health of the people in those areas. Tell folks where these hot spots are and maybe some of the characteristics of them.
Sure. There was five hotspots that we found, one in the Nicoya Peninsula of Costa Rica, Okinawa, Japan, Sardinia in Italy, and then a fourth one in Ikaria, Greece. It's off the coast of Turkey. It's an island. And then in Loma Linda, California, the only one here in America that we were able to find. And what you saw is environments where they move naturally. They walk to school. They walk to their friend's house. They walk to the grocery store. They biked. They didn't have the same conveniences that we have. They tend to, instead of hiring somebody to mow their lawn, even as they age, they did it themselves. And met this one lady, Abuela Panchita, at 104, she was mowing her lawn with a machete. The other areas are they had a strong sense of purpose and they could articulate that sense of purpose, whether they're 20 or 100, which is tied to about 7.5 years of longevity. They had simple techniques to help reduce stress. That's tied to the chronic inflammation. in our lives that cause that disease downstream. Healthier diet. They weren't vegetarians or vegans, but they did eat a lot more plant-based foods than we tend to eat here in America, about 90%. But they also had a lower caloric intake. And then lastly, I think it's how they came together as a community. They came together around their family and friends. You were supported by that love all the way through your life. But according to the Framingham study, your friends matter as well. If your three best friends are unhappy or smoke or drink too much, there's a 150% chance that you do as well. That health traits actually flow through a social network in the same way a virus does. And at the end of the day, we're all healthier if we have friends that are helping to support healthier behaviors. And more importantly, those friends that when you're having a bad day, you can pick up your phone and call them and they'll listen to you.
It's interesting because as this information was unpacked the first time around, this aspect of socialization and relationships struck me as being unusual. I was used to hearing different methods for dieting or maybe exercise or maybe both other things. But yet this covers so many other aspects of life. You mentioned purpose as well. And that seems to be one of the things that makes it so much different than a lot of the other things that are out there.
Yeah. Well, what we try to do is to look at the domains of health. How do you measure health? How do you define health? And then how do you measure it? And we partnered with the WBI to look at, if you wake up every day and you have no sense of purpose, you're not living out you're not using your skills and doing those things that really motivate you. Life's not as fun. I mean, it impacts your stress. It impacts your inflammation in a lot of different ways. If you look at your support around social, 30 years ago, the average American had three best friends. That's now down to a friend and a half. And the impact that having less than three friends, according to the Robert Wood Johnson Foundation, is about the same as smoking 20 cigarettes a day. Now, when you have that social network that can support you when you're having a bad day, that can support you when you need some advice around your kids or you're looking for a job and you need that support, to have those friends that you can talk to, that you can collaborate with, that can help you actually live that healthier life, it's a huge difference. And that's one of the bigger areas that we try to focus on is that social connectivity. I mean, how do we come together as a community versus an individual? Because I think if we're all in it together around a common goal and a common mission, life is just a little bit easier.
As you speak around the country, maybe other places as well, regarding blue zones, do you find a lot of initial skeptics?
We find a lot of initial skeptics, and a lot of that is tied to really not knowing what Blue Zones is, that this isn't us coming into communities, telling communities what to do. These are community-led initiatives where a steering committee in your community, for example, and a team that was hired on the ground, we used our resources to hire a team, we used our resources to bring the right steering committee and leadership and partnerships in the community to actually measure so that we understand what are we trying to move, what does success look like in your community, and then work with your community to put together what we call a blueprint for that transformation and try to just make sure that everybody's accountable to that. But these are community-led, and what we try to do, and you heard me mention it early, is not try to take people's choices away, but how do we set up environments where it's just a little bit easier for us to be healthier, where it's a little bit easier for us to not have to go through the disease burden that I don't think anybody wants to go through. And it's just focused on the environment.
We've seen different societal changes. You back up a number of years. It was not uncommon to see doctors smoke in medical offices, restaurants where you could smoke inside the restaurant, and then magically the next table was not smoking. I never figured out how that worked. But, some of those things, especially in Oregon, rules have changed. And then you get younger people who grow up with the sort of the new parameters. And then when you tell them what I just said, they look at you and said, what do you mean they used to do it like that?
100%. But I think that there's other things that start cropping in on that. right? When you look at for childhood, for example, I think smoking is a great example, but you now have vaping. Now, what does vaping do to the student's health? What does it do to their long term? And is it that drug that starts kind of moving to the next thing, which is smoking or whatever else? So how do we make sure that the next generation are better off than we are? Because I think all of us as parents are trying to make our kids' lives better. We want our kids to grow up healthier and better and have better lives than we have. But the problem is the life expectancy of our kids right now is less of that of our own. You know, we're going in the wrong direction when it comes to longevity. We're going in the wrong direction when it comes to the compression of morbidity, that time between when you get sick and when you die. Our kids have it worse off than our parents do. And I think it's something that we need to pay attention to and really understand and get down to why is that and what can we do about it as a community so that you know, everybody's life is better off. They're living the life they want to live with purpose, and long life.
So how is Blue Zones work funded?
That's a good question. Blue Zones is always privately funded. In your case, in your community's case, it started with a grant from Cambia Health. Came in and did a larger portion with a smaller matching grant from some of your community partners. And due to the success of the program, your community has decided they want to kind of keep this going. So there's now a number of partners. I don't remember how many exactly, that private funders that are coming together to support the next phase of work to keep this work going because they're seeing the value and the impact. And these are again, nonprofit and partners in the community that come together that really understand the value of Blue Zones. They understand the value of health and what it does not only to the life of the individual, but how it also sets up a community where people want to move to raise their kids, where you have those better schools, where you have those better locations that's just better for us all.
So is this pretty much what you spend all your time doing, is out there working with communities and organizations to promote this concept of Blue Zones?
Yep, pretty much. Right now, what I'm doing is my brother Dan is right now in the process of doing 4 more books tied to Blue Zones and another TV special, and really trying to kind of expand the research of the book and really continue to tell that story. And what I'm doing is working with communities around this model to continue to improve it and continue to make sure that it meets the community where it's at. Lately, what we've done is partnered with Adventist Health. As a nonprofit hospital system in this country, you have to do a CHNA, a community health needs assessment, and then spend money for if you make any profits at that nonprofit hospital, you have to spend that back into the community. And what they're doing is leveraging Blue Zones around all the communities where they have a Blue Zone, where they have a hospital, to really focus on how do we get ahead of those social determinants of health that lead to sickness, and how do we get upstream of some of those. And that's another area where I'm focused on right now, which is really exciting. Blue Zones is in over 58 communities across the United States, impacting about 4 million lives right now. So, and we're just continuing to grow, which is really fun. And again, the only way we can grow is by leveraging the partnerships and the learning from communities like yourself that has really taken Blue Zones, not only through that certification that I mentioned, but a commitment to keep it going, a commitment to really be able to take the next step. Because what the certification was is how do you reach a tipping point? And then once you reach that tipping point in your community, how do you then leverage the success to continue that well-being? Because if you think you're going to solve all the well-being problems in a community in 3 years, it just doesn't happen so easy. So how do we kind of get the momentum and then capitalize on those momentums to really target the areas that the community wants to impact.
About a minute left. How do people learn more about Blue Zones, both on a national level and with what's going on locally?
Great question. The best way to learn about Blue Zones nationally is bluezones.com, our website. And there's the best way to learn about it locally is there's a Facebook page, Blue Zone Project Umpqua. And if that's not something that you're into is Facebook, there's also an email, bzpumpqua@gmail.com, which would get you directly to the local team who's been doing all this work for the past 4 years and are keeping it going.
So on Monday, I believe it is, a virtual celebration for the certification of the local community, and the staff telling me a lot more things are still to come for Blue Zones in this area. Nick, thanks for being on with us this afternoon.
I appreciate your time and congratulations. It's actually really exciting for me to be on this call after being in your community 3.5 years ago. It's just such an honor.
And it's interesting as well that we're one of, I think it's four communities in Oregon that have gotten this far with Blue Zones.
Yep, exactly.
All right, Nick Buettner from Blue Zones, Vice President of Product for Blue Zones. Nick, thanks again. We'll talk sometime up the road.
Sounds good. Thanks again.
1257 at News Radio 1240 KQEN.
Listening to Inside Douglas County on News Radio 1240 KQEN. A daily look at the people and issues that are shaping Douglas County. The show will be available as a podcast in just a few minutes at 541radio.com. So share it and let others who weren't listening live know about today's show. Inside Douglas County is a public affairs presentation of Brook Communications. Your home for Douglas County's news team. News Radio 1240 KQEN.